Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Sawubona. In Senegal, Nanga Def. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
And grand rising to all of you who have joined us on this Saturday morning on the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. And feel free to call in 515-605-9325 and press 1 when you are ready to speak, and we will gladly take your calls. We want you to weigh in on what we saw today, what we've seen this week, and what we have celebrated. The confirmation of Ketanji Brown Jackson as the first Supreme Court Justice of the United States, who is African-American and female. And I like the way people say the first, which means we do expect there to be more. We expect her to not be the last. And she's a young woman, certainly someone who has time to spend a lifetime, and, you know, we're living longer these days as well. She's 52 years old, and in 30 years she'll be 82, and that is an age that some justices have still remained on the bench in the Supreme Court. So she's going to be there for the next two generations to see and to experience the feeling that anybody can become a Supreme Court justice if they put in the work to learn the law, learn the Constitution, and learn how it has been applied and should be applied. Now, there are many times that situations happen, and the question is this constitutional? The question is this something that the government should uphold, or should this be overturned? So the Supreme Court becomes the ultimate court of appeals when it comes to what is the real policy that governs this nation, a nation founded with some wonderful words on paper. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal. And the idea was to put an end to a class system and to create a system of equality. But the founding fathers themselves, many of them were owning human beings and forcing them into a state of enslavement at the threat of death. So there was a bit of a contradiction at the inception of this nation. The question is, can we remove the contradictions in the hearts of those who wrote the words on the paper so that the laws actually reflect the spirit of the words if they actually were carried out in the right spirit? Well, we're going to talk to a judicial candidate, certainly a member of our Female Solutions family, Attorney Wendy Williams, who is going to join us today. And as a Cook County judicial candidate, she'll give an analysis of what really happens in the courtroom so that we can be realistic about our expectations. We have court cases that come before a panel of judges who use their own knowledge and beliefs about the meanings of the Constitution, as well as their own life experiences, to determine what is the best decision. And this is ultimately considered the law of the land. Well, we've got a number of issues that the Supreme Court has ruled on, which has changed the direction of the nation in many instances. And depending on the mood of the country at the time, it determined whether a group of people were given freedom or bondage. We have the famous Dred Scott decision. And, of course, for those who don't remember, because you weren't there, this was determining whether or not a man set free might be re-enslaved, even if he was living in a free territory in the United States, which was approximately half slave and half free at that time, dividing line north, south, the Mason-Dixon line, and of course, those who were escaping from bondage knew they had to get to a certain point north, and the belief would be that they would be safe. But slavery being the economic institution that it was, for those who were able to capture and return lost so-called property, there were rewards, and so they went after the rewards. Well, this also gave rise to a business of capturing anybody with dark skin and selling them into slavery, even if they were minding their own business as free people. And many of us saw the movie 12 Years a Slave, when a free black man had a wife and children and everything, got drunk with some white companions, and they saw a business opportunity, and they sold him away, and he was stuck in that situation of bondage for 12 years. He finally was able to track down people who could vouch for his free status, and he was released, but he spent 12 years, and he wrote a book about it. And in these modern times, we saw a movie about it, reenacting that horrific experience. So such is the history of America. We have the Supreme Court ruling on Brown versus Board of Education, which was to outlaw segregation in public schools, a practice which ensured that those of African descent or those deemed Negro or colored at the time would often be stuck in inferior education institutions and therefore not equipped to rise to the same economic level, not having the same skills and knowledge and information that would empower them to maintain an equal economic footing with others. So that battle certainly changed the trajectory of the nation and changed the face of education, but it also brought to the surface a lot of fears and a lot of hatred in the hearts of whites who did fear what would happen if their children mingled socially, intellectually, and other ways with those of African descent, those who had experienced the discrimination of a system called Jim Crow, which was to keep people of different so-called races divided. Well, of course, the concept of race itself is imaginary. There's no such thing. Invented by people who wanted to designate a way to provide a class system between people. But it had such an extreme impact on the psychology of black people, many of whom could escape enslavement, cruelty, and discrimination if they just designated themselves as white, even if their ancestry was from Africa. So we've had this color code system for the past several centuries, and it still exists in the undercurrents of our social system today. We saw the movie School Days with Spike Lee pinpointing, even in our historically black colleges and universities, that same colorism that exists among the students who are affected by the society in which they were raised. We recently had the Crown Act passed as legislation, which made it a law that you cannot discriminate against someone for wearing their natural hair texture as opposed to trying to use heat or chemical processes to straighten out the wrinkles and look more of the hair texture of European ancestry. How ridiculous is that, that we had to have a law? But that is some of the vestiges of the enslavement period, which actually happened at the very inception of this nation. So will the installing of a black woman, a woman of African descent, a woman descending from the American African experience, will her presence change the flavor of America? Will it change the behavior? Will it change rulings on laws? And will it change attitudes of those who are still striving to maintain a color-based class system, an economic inequality, and a political inequality, and a social inequality? Is this step going to reverse the attitudes of generations coming and observing this black woman on the Supreme Court? Well, we'll see, just like we'll see how those who were born and raised during the 8 years of Barack Obama's presidency are affected in terms of their belief in equality and empowerment and opportunity available to all people. We'll see if those who have been raised in these times think differently than those born and raised a generation before them. We'll see if these images are making a difference in the psyche of the children. And we'll see if these images are making a difference in the attitudes and behavior of those who have strongly held on to racism as a belief system. It was observed that Republican members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, the members of the Republican Party who did not agree with the vote taken to confirm Ketanji Brown Jackson as a Supreme Court justice, walked out during the proceedings, left the chamber, as if to say, we disagree. It was an act of disrespect, but it also can be ignored because they can't change the reality of who she now is. And we want to say grand rising to our beautiful queen, Sister Zelda, Monday Morning Mindfulness host. And she says she hopes this is not another Clarence Thomas episode. Well, that's another issue. We assume that because someone has dark skin, that they have a particular political opinion. We assume that because someone is female, they have a particular political opinion. And are we not understanding that the reason why they got to the position that they are in is because of their political opinions, which by and large probably favor the majority opinion of the nation, which right now is not necessarily favoring those of African descent who have been here. Not necessarily the recent immigrants who may still see themselves as immigrants, but those who built this nation, those who suffered the trauma of separation from their homeland and dismantling of their memories of cultural behaviors and practices, those who have been forbidden to speak their mother tongue until generations later it was forgotten, those who cannot even claim an ethnic heritage among the many ethnicities across the African continent, those who are still carrying the trauma of extreme violence that the slave experience projected and forced upon those who were held captive. We assume that someone who may descend from that experience will have empathy and sympathy and compassion and insight when cases come involving the fate or the practices or the policies involving African American people. But that may or may not happen. We don't know what Ketanji Brown Jackson will decide, because her decisions have to be based on, is this constitutional, and what is the legal precedent based on what we have decided before. That's what the U.S. Supreme Court does. And even though Thurgood Marshall had a certain influence as the first African-American U.S. Supreme Court justice, even then, this was a struggle. And things don't always come out the way we desire based on all the other justices and their opinions. So one person might be able to sway others, and one person might be swayed by others. So we don't know. Thank you for your comments. And Curtis Kojo Morrow says, yes, the forgotten warriors whose shoulders we are now standing, we the survivors salute them. Rest in peace, comrades. And, of course, you can go to this website for more on the publications of our dear brother, Curtis Kojo Morrow, one of those who has lived through American wars, participated in American wars, and seen America from outside the scope of America to get an understanding of what other people really think about us. And when we participate in wars that have nothing to do with our well-being but are part of someone else's economic agenda, how are we seen by those who know that we in this nation are not receiving freedom, justice, and equality? Are we fighting the wrong battles? Do we need to stay out of other people's business? And do we need to have a better understanding and a better worldview so that we're not constantly hoodwinked into participating in mass murder to uphold somebody else's economic agenda? Today we need to be a little wiser. Where Curtis Kojo Morrow, of course, is an elder who has participated in the Korean War and has received an eye-opening experience in his return to our native land of our ancestors and become a citizen of Ghana for a while and getting a real insight on what it feels like to be in a land where you are not a minority and you have the power to determine your destiny. Well, we have that power everywhere we live. We have that power because that power is within. But how do we go about harnessing that power as a collective in a nation that still retains hostilities in the hearts of some of the people who have garnered positions of authority and influence? Can we take back our power by having a more united front when we address issues? And can we unite when we have different political opinions? As our sister Zelda points out, we got a sister on the Supreme Court, but we don't really know how she thinks, even though she went through some vigorous questioning. But we don't know the decision she's going to make, and we don't know the cases that the Supreme Court is going to have to hear. And we don't know how her presence is going to impact the future of the nation, because some decisions have definitely had an impact for generations. And Curtis Kojo Morrow says, and by all means, I wasn't alone. There were 3,000 in all, of which we lost 1,000, also known as killed in action. KIA. And we have many who, even coming back from the Vietnam War, are still retaining the trauma of participating in a battle that no one really understood, even to this day. Well, we just came back from participating in a global meeting with HWPL, and that stands for Heavenly Culture, World Peace, Restoration of Light, the organization founded by Chairman Man Healy. And it is a group designed to appeal to the nature of humanity and desiring peace, knowing that many who are part of religious communities, at the foundation of their teachings is the teachings of peace. But where did we go astray? That we started focusing on the differences and warring over the differences and causing this destruction. And can we come back to a commonality and a strategy to put in practice the teachings of the one we know as Jesus, in which the foundation was love your neighbor as yourself? Can we do that? And how do we do that? Well, his address to the pastors across America was one in reminding them of the prophecies of war in these times, but to realize that the prophecies of war was not about nation against nation. It was about the spiritual warfare, a state of being, a state of mind, a state of heart, a desire for peace in conflict with a desire for conflict. And those two spiritual states would be at war in these times. Well, isn't that what we're seeing? Those who are striving for equality, fairness, fair distribution of resources and equal access to all, fighting against those who want to maintain a class system of unfairness, unequal distribution of resources, control of other people's things and taking other people's things and hurting other people in order to force acquiescence to mistreatment. Aren't we seeing those two mindsets? The mindset of respect for all, regardless of your difference, and disrespect for anyone who is different. Those two mindsets, those two states of being are at war with each other in these times, and we are seeing it. So when we take a look at someone who is appointed, someone who is confirmed, someone who will be serving on the highest court of the land, our concern is, what is the state of your spirit? What is the state of your heart? What is the state of your mind? What side of the battle will you be fighting on? Because there are two sides at war. And when we can't see what is right, we can easily be deceived into following what is wrong, what is hurtful and harmful and distressful and damaging, believing it's correct because of the conditioning that we have received since birth. The conditioning that comes from school systems, from mass media, even from our religious institutions, and teaching that some people deserve greater privileges and treatment than others. Some people deserve control over lands, even if occupied by others. Some people deserve authority over others. And if they don't get what they want, then it's okay to use force. And we've applauded people that have been slayers of many, calling them heroes in history because they were skilled at mass murder in order to take over other people's land. So that thought has been put forth. That thought has been indoctrinated in the minds of our children so that when a war erupts, we're believing that the noble thing to do is take up arms and go and participate in the mass murder instead of working toward a peaceful resolution to conflict. So that's the spiritual warfare, prophesized. And Chairman Manhe Lee spoke of the book of Matthew, Matthew verse 24, and the prophecies of wars and rumors of wars. Well, the wars that we are seeing are the spiritual wars, as he explained. This is the battle that we are fighting. And we're fighting that battle in the minds and hearts of our children, because they will inherit the earth that we have created for them. And what have we given them in terms of understanding of what should happen? And Curtis says, credits for the interview goes to, well, of course, we appreciate Curtis Kojo Morrow for being a witness that war does not bring peace. War brings destruction, and war brings later vengeance. And certainly war brings generational trauma. And as a historian who has lived through some profound times, he has shared with us often on this show what it's like to be among your people who have not been traumatized by the enslavement experience, and how when you realize you have the power to choose your fate, you think differently. So it's important for our children to see themselves as empowered and to see themselves as capable of becoming rulers in the land where they live, or at least people who have the authority to make decisions about their lives. So perhaps seeing this image of Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson will remove the ideas of helplessness and hopelessness that have impacted so many of our youth and driven them to make bad decisions when it comes to their choice of violence to get what they desire. Perhaps we can empower them to seek another way. Well, we'll be back after this brief message. I'm going to share with you a little bit of the proceedings. You've probably seen it, of course, but we're going to share it with you. And then we'll be joined by Cook County candidate for judge, our dear sister, Wendy Williams, who, with her 30-plus years in family law, has been teaching us the importance of being able to understand when someone is literally too dysfunctional to be in a personal relationship, to start a family, to create an environment that is healthy, because they're still carrying the emotional damage from their own upbringing. It's time for us to heal. It's time for us to heal ourselves and to heal the nation. And it's time for us to recognize when there is sickness among us, so that we can make different choices when it comes to trusting someone with leadership. And this most definitely is a trust that is given when we elect someone to public office, whether it is on the local, state, or national level. It's a trust. And when we can trust someone with leadership, it is because they have proven that they are trustworthy. And so we definitely want to examine where someone stands as we continue to participate in this modern day spiritual warfare that is going on in front of our faces and behind our backs and is affecting our lives. And we need to know how to handle those who are in positions of authority who are on the wrong side of this spiritual war. How do we win? How do we bring peace? We'll be right back after these brief messages. We want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. And call us, 515-605-9325. And press 1 when you're ready to speak. And if you're on our switchboard now, we certainly want to hear from you. Call in, 515-605-9325. And press 1. We've got some callers on the line now. And we'll be right back after this quick break. So stay with us. Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment, 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
Of Ketanji Brown Jackson. Question is, of course, will her one position make a difference in American policy? Are our expectations realistic or unrealistic? And what do we know about what a judge actually does in the process of deciding these cases? Because they're just one voice. with one vote. Well, let's go to our phone lines and go to area code 314-381 Grand Rising. Thank you for joining us on this Saturday edition of The Solution.
Well, hello, Naomi. How are you today?
I'm fantastic, as always. Our dear friend, Bianchi, from St. Louis or wherever you're traveling right now.
Well, I'm in the South. Yeah, you know, Mama D says she wanted to be a panelist on her program. I don't know when it's going to be, but I'm not too...
Well, it'll be the fourth Saturday of this month, so we're looking forward to you being a panelist on her show.
Well, I heard some things mentioned, and I hate to say ain't nobody on here but you.
Mm-hmm.
But the first black Supreme Court justice in the United States was a judge by the name of Jesse Franklin in 1878. Just in case, that's what I teach my kids.
Jesse Franklin in 1878. Well, you know, of course, we can instantly look like that up on
Well, yeah,
Google.
Go ahead. We learned that before there was ever a Google. But, you know, another thing, I hear people always make comments about Clarence Thomas. You know, Clarence Thomas is a Geechee, by the way. He speaks the Gullah language. One of the reasons why come he don't speak much is because coming up, kids used to tease him by his heavy accents from speaking Geechee as he came up through the years. And he's an excellent jurist. I hear a lot of blacks always talk about how bad he is by asking, well, what case do you not agree with, his opinion? And they can't say anything. They don't know, because they're going by what they hear by some pundits that's left-leaning and organized. But I would like to know, what case do they have a disagreement with? There's been cases when he even commented and gave reference to words spoken by one of your favorites, Malcolm X. So I like to know what they don't like. And you know, you talk about this nominee. I think when Joe Biden, I know when Joe Biden made mention that he's going to nominate a black female, that there was illegal. Because in the 1964 Civil Rights Act, you're not supposed to use race as a determinant. You should say you're just going to appoint a female without using the adjective black. And you know, it's funny with Joe Biden, because back in 2005, when George Bush Jr. nominated Janice Rogers Brown, who was quote unquote a black female, from the California courts, she was being nominated as the D.C. appellate court. And Biden spoke out even on Face the Nation. I guess it was on Face the Nation. Yeah, it was on Face the Nation in July 2005. Of his disapproval and that the nomination would cause trouble. That's what Joe Biden said about this black female, Janice Rogers Brown. Then, when it came up to nominate her for the Supreme Court, he further said, I can assure you that would be a very, very, and he added another very difficult fight. And she probably would be filibustered. And they walked out on her, the Democrats did. That's my critical race theory lessons. But nobody talks about that thing. Nobody talks about that at all. Of course, you knew that, didn't you?
Well, I've heard, and always have to determine what is hearsay, what is news, what is opinion. You mentioned Clarence Thomas and what were some of his decisions that people might have taken issue with. And, you know, one of the things, of course, in the beginning, there was a controversy surrounding him with Anita Hill and whether or not there was sexual harassment involved and that sort of thing. But now there's a list of, it says five Clarence Thomas worst decisions, and this is, again, someone's opinion. because there was a belief that as a black man so-called replacing Thurgood Marshall on the Supreme Court in 1991, that he would have the same philosophy, but he did not. He was appointed by President George W. Bush, and so what else were they expecting? Well, I suppose there are some who did not like the fact that he opposed abortion and gay rights, and they naming that him as a severe social conservative. I don't really understand those terms, conservative. Either you are for people being respected or you are not. I don't know how you call it conservative. But it has been said that he sexually harassed Anita Hill when she was testifying before the Senate at his hearings, and that he had a major appetite for hardcore porn. I don't know if that's correct or not.
Well, let's talk about those, because I know you got a whole list there. Now, I still want to know, when I ask a black person, what is it that you don't like about Clarence Thomas? And it surely couldn't they say it couldn't be abortion, because blacks are heavily affected by abortions. Matter of fact, if you were to count up all the abortion that black females have had since the Roe decision up until 30 years later, it would be equivalent. I get this. It would be equivalent to removing all and each and every black out of 15 states, Naima. Other words, 15 states, if you got up Monday morning, it wouldn't be a black person in the state, not one. That's what that would look like. So I'm surely they wouldn't. Blacks would not be against his opposition to abortion, because you have blacks that also is about the preservation of life.
Well, you know, you have, that's one of those issues that is really, each individual has their own opinion. You can't say, well, all blacks this or all whites think that or all blacks don't like this or that. Each person has their own individual perspective. It's not really a black and white issue, because you have some pro and some against that are black. But now, this is one of the rulings that some people take issue with, the Lawrence versus Texas in 2003 decision, and he struck down a Texas sodomy law on a right to privacy basis. And Kennedy wrote the major opinion in the case, striking down a Texas sodomy law on a right to privacy basis. And Thomas was a dissenter, along with Scalia and Chief Justice William Rehnquist. And the Lawrence versus Texas was a major victory for gay rights that Kennedy supported and Thomas opposed. So,
well, the thing is, on that decision, is that what grown-ups do in the privacy of their home is their business, not the sheriff's business, which is a good one. It's a good decision. You know, here's another thing. I wonder what people think that Miss Brown, Jackson, is that her name? No, Tonja Jackson Brown. Miss Brown, and I think she's qualified, but I disagree with her being acceptable when you look at some of the cases that she had ruled on and her leniency, as they say, on pedophiles.
Well, you know, again, because sex seems to be a thing that is something that of an American obsession, people's sexual behavior and rights. And I think the idea comes that, as you just said, adults have a right to whatever physical activities they choose. The question is, how do you prevent assault of a child or a minor? And there was a 2015 decision Obergefell versus Hodges,
legalizing interracial marriage, wasn't it?
No, this is legalizing same-sex marriage. I think they probably
same-sex marriage. You're absolutely right. I'm sorry. Let me tell you about that case. And, you know, here's the thing. It's not about a session about sex. When you start talking about having sex with kids, that there is totally ridiculous. And people need to be punished to the greatest extent, even given death penalty, for having sex and abusing the innocence of a child. On this case that you're talking about, Obergefell.
That's always the issue. People are worried about if you allow those who say they are same gender loving, as they say, if you allow people the right to privacy of that, there will be some type of abuse of minors. Well, it's the same thing with heterosexual people. The issue has to be protecting the rights of minors, not deciding which sex someone should be involved with.
I don't think it was ever a case whether that was brought up. Was it Naima? Was it a case between a gay person and their having sex with kids? I think it was anybody having sex with kids. Obergefell had to do with interracial marriage. No, you're right. Same-sex marriage, which, by the way, listen at this. You had two justices, Kagan and Ginsburg, who had performed same-sex marriages. So in that 5-4 decision, they should have recused themselves. But they didn't.
Why?
Was
because
conflict
they'd already
of interest. Yes, because they had already performed. I think Ginsburg had done too. Kagan won. They had performed marriage between people of the same sex. Now, I don't care if people get married myself, personally. I don't want the people of that persuasion around my young kids, teaching my young kids.
That's the thing. There's a difference between a pedophile and a homosexual. Because a
I don't want either one. Really.
But you can tell if a person's a pedophile just because they're heterosexual or homosexual. You can't tell by looking at them.
Well, you know, just like we had a case in St. Louis.
Sexuality.
Well, a black parent didn't want their child in this classroom of a Nigerian that was teaching at Normandy High School because he had a heavy accent. So people have a right, and this is a black family that's done that, people have a right, I guess, to determine the environment that their children exist in. And, you know, what would have been a good case for her was Lovins versus Virginia. Does she think that the Supreme Court should have legalized interracial marriage? Now, I think that was wrong for the Supreme Court to do
that. She's in her interracial marriage, so.
Well, that's what I would have liked to ask her that question. Well, do you think that the Supreme Court legalizing interracial marriage in Lovins versus Virginia was the right thing? I say no, because the Constitution specifically states that that's left up to the state.
Well, you know that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous for somebody outside of you to decide who you can marry. It's ridiculous whether it's because of race or anything else. Two people are grown people, and they decide if they want to marry, and it should not be left up to the state to decide if they can. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's ridiculous for the Supreme Court to do what the Constitution. See, when she sat down, the first thing she said as she was scripted and coached, I will support the Constitution of the United States of America. Well, then, if you're going to do that, then do it. Because a Supreme Court justice don't make laws. A Supreme Court
right.
justice don't interpret the Constitution. It's very, very clear.
That is what they do. They interpret the Constitution. That's exactly
no,
what
they
do.
No, they can't interpret. They don't interpret the Constitution. They interpret the laws.
They don't.
Well,
that's
you're
going to
argue
job.
With me.
That's their job. That is the
How,
job.
Well, let me ask you a question. I'm going to ask you a simple question. I'm sure you could use some logic in this. How can you interpret that which makes it possible for you to exist?
Because
she can't do it.
Everybody has a point of view that is different. So you can't say, well, this is what it means. When you can have all those justices.
No, it's not that. It's about
court, each one have a different opinion about the same word.
Let me
so
say this.
They have to come to an or at least
who
a
makes
majority
the
of what the words mean.
Who makes the laws?
That's what the job is, interpretation. That's what it is.
The lawmakers make the laws. A bill becomes a statute. That statute comes under the Code of Federal Regulations. Then it goes to the department that it applied to. Title 26 goes to the Internal Revenue Service. The head of the Internal Revenue Service reads that bill and interprets it and makes rules based on what that bill is about. Now, if you, a citizen, have a problem with the rule based on the determination of the head of the IRS, then you take it to court. And it's up to judge, the courts, to determine if the rule is following the law. The law was made in Congress. She cannot change Congress. The Supreme Court gives Congress the ability to make the laws.
She can interpret whether something is constitutional. And that's why we have constitutional amendments.
Wait, what she interpret if the law is constitutional, not the Constitution itself?
Well, that's why
the
Supreme Court was established, to have a body that would interpret if something was constitutional. And
the way you said it is quite confusing.
What is happening in the present?
The way you
said
it, let me say it. Hang on for a second. The way you said it is confusing. If a human being, that baby is born with all the rights that the universe bestows upon it. The only thing and persons that can take away those rights is either federal, state, local, municipal laws. That's it. Other than that, the child can do whatever they want. You as a person could do whatever you want. You can walk down the street butt naked if you want to, because your creator gave you the right to do that. Now, when you have one of those entities come along and say, Naima, you can't do that no more, then that's when the courts rule and see if that Naima, you can't do that anymore, is in violation of your constitutional rights. Only then.
Well,
and please don't walk down the street naked.
I want you to stay on as we bring on our judicial candidate at the top of the hour, Attorney Wendy Williams, who's running for county judge, and to give us some insight on the job of a judge. And as a black woman, are we...
You know, judges don't have to be lawyers, neither, by the way.
Opinion about things. Not every black woman has the same opinion about homosexuality, about same-sex marriages, about abortion, or any number of controversial issues. There is no black woman's position on everything, because each black woman has her own particular...
Well, she's supposed to be a judge, regardless of her skin color. Why do the Democrats, always liberals, want to throw in skin color and race?
Well, they've been throwing it in. That's why everything's been all white male. It's been about white male. It's been about skin color and gender. You think only white males have it?
Of
course not.
Yeah, but when you look at your cities for the last 72 years, they've been about black Democrats.
Some of them, depend on the city.
St. Louis has for the last 72 years, first congressional district. Black Democrats, maybe a little bit shy of 72. So should we say that we want to have a black congressional candidate? You know, down in Memphis, Tennessee, Congressman Stephen Korn, who's a congressman for Shelby County, the 5th Congressional District, he's white. Blacks voted him in for the last three times. But guess what? Your congressional black caucus will not allow him to be a member, because they got a standing rule. It goes back to William Clay, further emphasized by his son, who was just defeated, Lacey Clay, that no whites are allowed. Not only no whites, but no conservative blacks neither is allowed in the Congressional Black Caucus.
Well, who's to determine what conservatism is? Because, again, each decision is going to be different. And
well,
there are
the
some
Republican black cannot
be run for office, some who've been Republican. So every city, every black person is going to be different. And there are some issues we expect everybody to have a similar opinion on because of our similar experience, but sometimes they don't, like a Clarence Thomas. And is there a thing as the black opinion? No, there of course isn't. There, you have an opinion that might differ from many black people, and you're a black man, but that doesn't mean you see things the same way as all black people.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. The Congressional Black Caucus, if you have a congressperson who's black and Republican, they can't join. If you have a congressperson who's white,
they can't
represent.
Join. Is it written anywhere that you're a Republican? Is it written anywhere?
Yes, it says a standing rule. I can send you some literature. I can send you some documents on it where it was mentioned because people complain. You had a person out in California that complained who was a person of color. You had several that was black. And you got Steve Cohen, who's presently the congressperson for the 5th Congressional District of the state of Tennessee, which includes Memphis, Tennessee. He was voted in by the black constituents, majority of that city, and the Congressional Black Caucus, CBC, won't allow him because he's white. And they supposed to be the purveyors of righteousness. Huh?
Well, I mean, if it's called the Black Caucus, then one could say, okay, that's discriminatory. But that's what happened when they were set up. Just like if there were going to be a Hispanic caucus, they would have the right to do that.
You think so? So should they have a right? They was complaining about an all white and all black school prom in Georgia in one school district. So that's right. Anyway, I'm gonna let you go. I'm going to get off so somebody else can call, yeah. But,
we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And I want you to hold on. We're going to come back with the judicial candidate and talk more about the power of a judge and what about things like this. If people decide they want to willingly separate, is that something that is anti-constitutional? Is it something that it's their right to do? If people want to engage in sexual behavior that others don't agree to, is that their right to do? And can a Supreme Court judge make a decision on that? And how do we protect our children from behavior that is emotionally destructive to their well-being? Can we even determine what that is? Because so much of our culture is already emotionally destructive. Well, we're going to come back and talk about that with attorney Wendy Williams, who is a candidate for judge in Cook County and has had over 30 years experience as a family law attorney and has certainly been a powerful contributor to the Female Solution Global Radio TV show in helping us to prevent some mistakes we make because of lack of discernment of character of people in our midst. So we'll talk about the skills it takes to be able to judge when we come back. So if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 when you're ready to speak, and we'll come right to you and get your thoughts. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. And in case you didn't notice the resemblance, we're also three sisters.
We're going to be coming to you every week, sharing our successes and our mistakes as we navigate our lives as moms, wives, sisters, daughters, and of course, black women in today's world.
We'll talk about it all. Race, politics, religion, economics, culture, and we'll take a look at everything from whether or not to use corporal punishment to how do you teach your children about sex. Look for our upcoming book, Growing Up Charles. It's a personal story about our lives growing up in Maple Park on Chicago's South Side. I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. Follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Three Black Moms.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Back, we're going to share with you a bit of the speech from the new incoming U.S. Supreme Court Justice, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, as recorded by C-SPAN, and get your thoughts as she addresses those gathered at the White House in Washington. And let's see here.
Just how much this moment, multitude of my chambers,
okay, here we go.
Toiling away, have spent years toiling away in the relative solitude of my chambers with just my law clerks in isolation. So it's been somewhat overwhelming, in a good way, to recently be flooded with thousands of notes and cards and photos expressing just how much this moment means to so many people. The notes that I've received from children are particularly cute and especially meaningful, because more than anything, they speak directly to the hope and promise of America. It has taken 232 years and 115 prior appointments for a black woman to be selected to serve on the Supreme Court of the United States. But we've made it. We've made it. And our children are telling me that they see now, more than ever, that here in America, anything is possible.
All right. Here in America, anything is possible. Is it? And will her appointment make our children believe anything is possible? Will her appointment change the trajectory of this nation, which has been steeped in much race-based conflict? And will her appointment make a difference when it comes to decisions that are affecting people's lives, issues such as racial profiling or issues that are going to determine people's right to express themselves as they see fit, whether it is a dress style, a hair texture, a skin color. What are the issues that women differ on that keep coming to the Supreme Court? The Roe versus Wade issue is always something that is not a clear-cut black or white issue, because people feel differently based on their religious beliefs, based on what they believe is morally correct, and whatever issues they have regarding sexuality and all of that. And because there's so much confusion about sexuality among the human family, those decisions always bring a lot of controversy. But the question is, can a Supreme Court judge make a major difference in the direction that this nation is headed? And can some of the damage done in the past be corrected? When all they have to go on, as our previous caller said, is the Constitution. And will the Constitution, as it's written, be enough to ensure that all people are truly protected in terms of their rights? Well, this is a major expectation that people have, that one woman's appointment is going to change America. And it may change some of the beliefs of young black girls who can now see themselves in empowering positions. But it may also, just as the election of Barack Obama, give the illusion that we are now colorblind, and therefore anybody complaining needs to just shut up and take it. But one of the things our guest has done today is given us some guidelines on judging character. And there are so many decisions that need to be made when it comes to judging the character of a person. So how much does a judge rely on their private personal experience? How much do they rely on knowledge of the law? How much are they influenced by the mood of the country? When Thurgood Marshall was appointed to the Supreme Court, it was coming on the heels of the civil rights movement, and President Johnson inheriting a position after the assassination of John F. Kennedy. There was a need to present a, I guess you'd say, liberal point of view. And as Pianki pointed out earlier about Clarence Thomas, that was someone who made decisions that a number of people agreed with who might have even been considered conservative and white. So is there a black point of view? Or is there a universal point of view that has to do with what is correct, what is incorrect, and what makes a person a good judge of character, intention, and what makes a person a good judge of the law if the standard that they have to follow is the law? So we know that those who run for judge have had a number of years in the courtroom observing behavior, observing circumstances that might be extenuating circumstances, and also knowing that their decisions are going to affect not just the lives of the person that the decision is made about, but is going to affect the lives of their families and everybody who's in similar circumstances. So, of course, we want you to press 1 when you're ready to speak, if you're on our switchboard now, and give us some insights as we take a look at the appointment of Ketanji Brown Jackson to the Supreme Court. And what will this really mean for the nation? Now, we've got some statements. We've got some statements from some of our Facebook Live viewers. And our sister Viata, our Friday host, says, I'm still wondering why Ms. Brown could not answer the question about woman. Now, that's something that was brought out. I believe Mama Dee kind of mentioned that on her show that, you know, okay, is there a controversy you're avoiding when someone says, what is your definition of a woman? Well, you have those that are female as by birth, and then there are those who have had some surgical alterations of their genitalia and are considering themselves female. So that being the case, that could be another issue as the transgender community makes its case that I have a right to choose what sex I'm going to express. And so there are those who say, well, I don't want you coming in my bathroom if you used to be a man. I don't care if you changed your genitals. I don't feel comfortable with that. So we have those issues. And Viata says, no change other than building pride and inspiration for people who look like her. So she says, well, that will be the change, you know, pride and people who look like her. Yeah. As a matter of fact, you know, she kind of looks like my older sister Barbara a little bit, you know, physically. That's cute. I mean, that's nice. You know, you say, okay, yeah, I know people look like you. But will that change attitudes? Will that change attitudes toward people who look like us? Will that change attitudes toward women? I mean, if somebody's sexist, will having a Supreme Court justice change what's inside of them? Time will tell, but usually someone else doesn't change what's inside of another person. That person has to change. So the question really becomes, what is really the power of a judge? And what are some of the things go into determining if a judge's experience will empower them to make decisions that we believe is for the better good of the society? Because every judge on the bench has a different life experience. And we can presume that someone who's had the American black experience would have a specific point of view, but that's not necessarily the case. And Curtis Kojo Morrow speaks about the issue of those who might be religious having certain opinions, but sometimes their religion and their behavior is kind of contradictory. Curtis says, true, before each battle, soldiers are allowed 10 minutes to pray to God, to the God of their choice, and to pray for victory, like we're sure our enemies are also doing, of course. So, okay, we're going to pray to God to give us victory, and then we're going to go out here and kill and believe we're right in doing that. And that's something to think about, because if you believe that God is on your side and you say you're spiritual, wouldn't God be more inclined to talk you out of using killing as a way to solve your differences? But there are those who have put forth the thought that war is good, war is necessary. And so how would someone make a decision about someone who chose to be a conscientious objector. I mean, we had Muhammad Ali, who had to really do a battle and finally, you know, take his case all the way to the highest court in the land to get the charges reversed against him after he was stripped of his title. So can you really say that someone's race and gender is going to determine what their point of view is? And Curtis says, teachers teach what they were taught to teach, and since knowing one's history instills the sense of entitlement, which some are born into or taught soon after birth, so why would they, the oppressors, make it righteous? That they feel is up to the younger generations. So what will younger generations get from what they observe with Ketanji Brown Jackson? Well, we want to get an inside view of what people are expecting from a black female judge. And are we expecting that someone who's black and female has a specific point of view just because they're black and female? Well, we want to welcome to our show our sister, our dear friend, and candidate for Cook County judge after a long, long, long bout as a family life attorney and one who's also dealt with criminal law and all of those issues that have to do with judging the character of one who stands before the courts. Thank you for joining us today, Attorney Wendy Williams.
You're wonderful. You are so wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for, thank you for that introduction. What can I say? I am so humble.
Well, we're so grateful that you were able to take out some time from your busy schedule of campaigning and also working in the courts and give us some insight from the position of one who's in the legal field. You know, a lot of people don't really understand what a judge does. And, you know, we as black people, we tend to think everybody is a civil rights worker that's supposed to be carrying a sign and marching down the street and not really understanding that that's not what judges do. They can't champion a particular cause. They have to make a decision based on facts presented by the attorneys. And you've been an attorney that has presented facts so that the judge can make a judgment. Tell us about that process. What does a judge use to make decisions in cases that are presented to them? What are some of the elements that go into that decision-making process?
Well, it's the trial itself. When a case is brought before the court, there's a criminal trial, a civil trial, or a hearing of some sort, especially in family law cases. Rarely do you see in family law cases juries, but in some states that could be the case. I want to start at the top, though. The Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson has been just a fantastic human being and a very knowledgeable and trained person fit to be on the Supreme Court 3 or 4 times. And we'll see. We'll see how she handles the rule of law. Will her experience as an African-American woman be prominent? I don't think so, and it's not necessary, and it's really not. Judges are no different from umpires in a baseball game. To oversimplify, I'm oversimplifying, so I don't want anybody calling me later on and saying, why did you say that? It's an oversimplification. We're there to call the balls and the strikes. That's it. We have some discretion, but sometimes we have no discretion at all. Who makes the law? Not the judge. The person, the body of people who make the law are the legislature, the Congress, the Senate, the House, locally here downstate, Springfield. Then there's the opportunity for the executor, the top executor of the top executive, I should say, of the state, like the governor of the country, like the president, they have some powers to do some of the things that can be done, laws, more like regulations, because if a different governor gets in or a different president gets in, those regulations and rules and executive orders can change. Different from the court system. The court system, if it's going to change the law, for instance, desegregation, Brown versus Education, where the judge heard facts, then made a decision. The umpire has to be at the game. The umpire can't stand outside of the ticket booth and say, come on in, buy a ticket, and the Cubs are going to win today. What's the point of having a fact finder? A fact finder can be a judge. A fact finder can be a jury. But in the case of the fact finder being a judge, that happens only at the trial court level. What the courts of review do is something altogether different. And I don't do appellate work, but I understand that if you have a basis in the trial, if there are procedures and laws were reviewable, then it goes up to the appellate, the Supreme Court of the state. Then if that's not enough and if it is available, then you move over into federal court, goes up the court's review, and it'll eventually land on Ketanji Brown Jackson's desk or at the door of the Supreme Court where a Ketanji Brown Jackson would be. Now,
I have a question because I had a little bit of a difference of opinion, I won't say argument, with one of our callers before you came on, Pianchi, you know, regular contributor, and was very opinionated about the court system, and he was saying that the Supreme Court justices cannot interpret the law. They just have to follow the law. And I said, no, actually, that is what they do. They have to interpret whether something is Constitution. He said they can't interpret the Constitution. They just have to follow the Constitution. And I said, that's what they are doing, is interpreting whether something is constitutional. But they have to interpret it because otherwise you have differing opinions about what something means. So that's why you have a body that has to deliberate and come to some kind of consensus, or at least a majority consensus on an issue, because there are always going to be different interpretations of what the Constitution meant, what the law meant, and whether or not a particular act was constitutional. And in some instances, you know, we've had to even amend the Constitution because it was determined that it wasn't just what had been written or interpreted before. But isn't there some level of interpretation that judges have to make when they make a decision?
They're dealing directly with a law, for instance. I would say yes, but there's also case law in some instances that precede that case. So a case would be like stop, search, and seizure, for instance. In those instances, previous cases, landmark cases decided by the Supreme Court as to what the law should be in those cases, in those trials, then it sets the precedent. And sometimes precedent has to be followed to keep chaos from happening. So, you know, if you live in a country where a dictator is, that dictator does not have to hold to case law that precedes his dictate. He can just start dictating all over the place. Up will be down, down will be up. Forgive me for oversimplifying, but I'm just trying to make a point. So you're correct, but the court does more than that. And I can't get into that because I don't practice in that area. But the court will do more than just interpret. Some things are interpreted in the context of the Constitution. For instance, the whole civil rights thing. Remember, civil rights was an act. You know, certain things were done that were acts. Some things are executive orders. This is why, you know, we're having a hard time with the voters' rights issues. Is it a state or a federal issue? There's the right to vote. That's one thing. But how that vote, how that election will take place is a state thing. And I think sometimes the public has problems with understanding what happens in Utah can't happen in Illinois. What happens in Illinois is not going to happen in Mississippi because each state legislature creates different laws. Yeah. Then if there is a need to now take 17 instances of voters' rights suppression from 17 different states, now that may land at the Supreme Court, as it did, right? Trump won the elections. Okay, it didn't happen because it landed at the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said what? We're not even going to look at that. I think whatever has happened in these different places, it'll stay that way. They don't always come in and just topple things. Sometimes the court can remain silent. It's called not taking cert. They're not going to hear the case. They're not going to review Trump's case. That was an example. And I'm oversimplifying because I know I'm speaking to an audience that may or may not have legal training. For those of you out there who do have legal training, forgive me. We'll discuss it at a seminar in our environment.
A lot of people don't necessarily have the deepest understanding about how the law works because for a long time, just even in getting things done, we've been on the protest end of it, and then we might see a law passed, and then we might not see it enforced, and so we're still trying to figure out who's responsible for making sure this happens once there's a decision made. But we got to take a break, and I've got some people that have texted me some questions. Feel free to call in, 515-605-9325, and press 1. Or if you're watching us on Facebook, feel free to write your comments in so we can put them on the screen and share them with our audience. I can't do it from my phone, so y'all got to actually type it in on the Facebook page. But we'll be right back, more with judicial candidate Attorney Wendy Williams, who is speaking on Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson and the process of judging. What does it really mean, and what powers do we have? What are we really expecting? And we will be right back after this break, so we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away, and feel free to press 1 if you are now on our switchboard. We will make sure that we get your comments in. So we will be right back after this break. Stay with us.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the Earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to... you constantly arguing with your spouse? Are your children misbehaving and acting out? Is someone in your family abusing drugs? Have you been the victim of domestic violence? Are you grieving over the loss of a loved one? Let us help you restore serenity to your life. At Serenity Family Social Services, we understand that good mental health is the result of emotional well-being. Our goal is to assist you and your family in removing emotional distress and restoring harmony and balance to your lives. We offer individual, couples, and family counseling. I'm Howard Williams, CEO of Serenity Family Social Services. Call us today at 312-315-4820. That's 312-315-4820.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my three-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viato.
Listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV show, and I'm Naeem Latif, and we have with us today Cook County Judicial Candidate Attorney Wendy Williams, and we've just seen the speech, the snippet of the speech of Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson at the White House. So many people are having great expectations of what's going to happen. But we still don't
We really should.
Judges. And there are nine justices on the Supreme Court, and five of them have to agree on any decision before they can have a ruling on something. And, you know, there are a lot of issues that are going to probably be up for discussion. And it's hoped that each judge has enough, whether it's courtroom experience or judging experience or whatever the case may be, so that they can make an informed decision based on their knowledge of the law. So, Wendy, how much of their decision-making skills is based on their knowledge of previous cases and how those decisions have come? Is that really mostly
what they have to handle? No, it's all of it. You know, it's all of it. The judge sits to listen for the facts of the case. That's number one. They listen to witnesses. They listen to testimony. They listen to expert testimony, if that's there. They listen to the plaintiff. They listen to the defendant, or they listen to the respondent. And at their fingertips, they also have the library of law in front of them. And after some years of experience, the ability to apply the law to the facts of the case in order to come up with a decision, be it criminal or civil. It's just that simple. Now, that's if the case is tried to the judge. There are also instances in which people demand jury trials in criminal and civil cases. So the jury of citizens, a jury of citizens sit and hear the facts of the case, and then they make decisions, and they also have in front of them what we call jury instruction. And the jury instructions are set based on the facts of the case. In other words, if you have a murder case, then you'll probably have jury instructions for a murder case. If you have a sexual assault case, you'll have jury instructions about sexual assault, okay? And then they go into the jury room, they make a deliberation, they come out with a decision. You just saw that with the Jussie Smollett case. You
right.
saw that with all the trials. The Jussie Smollett jury heard all the evidence, and they even had the benefit of hearing from Jussie Smollett.
Yeah.
And they found him guilty.
Yeah.
So, just like a judge will do the same thing. In some instances, a judge may be able to make a better decision than the jury based on that judge's experience and knowledge of the law and the procedures and some subtleties that the jurors may not have. And vice versa, the jurors may bring a case that the judge won't bring to the case or may not be able to bring to the case because of the law. Jurors, jurors can decide they may not follow the law. They may decide that the four men in Michigan are not guilty of plotting to kidnap the Michigan governor, okay? And a jury in Minnesota may conclude that putting your knee in the back of this man's neck was murder. A jury in California may listen to all the facts and decide that O.J. Simpson is not guilty of killing his wife and Ronald Goldman. That's what happens when the facts are brought before you at the trial court. Now, sometimes those issues are reviewable, and sometimes those issues are not reviewable. And I think that's what happens with the public not knowing the nuances of the criminal justice system. They get very uneasy, and they decide, okay, this whole system is a sham, but it's not. The Senate hearings for the Honorable Ketanji Brown Jackson were kind of like the personality traits of the constituents of each of those senators' jurisdiction.
Mm.
You see? And I knew something was up when I heard Republicans say, she's good at this and she's good at that and she's good at this and she's good at that, and certainly her experience and da-da-da-da-da, but we're still not going to vote for her to go on the court. And so that
That's
was
all,
more along the line.
All the qualifications,
Yeah, because her qualifications are much there. I mean, she's qualified to be three Supreme Court justices, okay? And there are others who have had her qualifications, and others we have seen with our own eyes do not have her qualifications. But interestingly enough, there have been over 100 Supreme Court justices who had not even been to law school. So for some of us, we thought, you know, this was pretty much a Senate hearing to really probably just make sure that their districts that they represent, that prevailing attitude came forth in that Senate hearing. That's the way I saw that. And that's public.
Yeah, I would think so,
but
because they
got to
run
involved in politics like that.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. When you're running, when you represent an area, you have to represent what you feel is the predominant attitude of the area that you represent, and that's what
no,
each
not
person
that you
does.
Feel, that you know, you don't you
that
don't,
you know.
You trust me, Josh Hawley and Mitch McConnell. They don't think that's what their jurisdiction or their district wants.
No.
That is what because that's
do
how
surveys,
they
surveys. They do polls.
Mm-hmm.
They listen,
mm-hmm.
and they say what people will support, because that's how they get reelected. I mean, that's the mm-hmm. name of the game, to represent the people
right.
where you live. So now I've got
right.
a couple
the
of comments that come, and you know, these might be issues that a judge could deal with or not. Obi Werlaw, he's a businessman. He says, what about the double standard on immigration policies? We need to talk about this. This is my money, and if you're not letting the blacks in, then don't use my money to let the whites either. Some of the Ukrainians at the border complaining about not being able to come through Mexico straight to the United States. You know, follow the money. So his thought is this whole war effort is, you know, an underlying thing that is unfair. But, you know, though, are those issues that a judge could handle, those legislative things that have to do with governmental policy, or are those executive office, you know, presidential things or governor or mayor type things? I mean, when it comes to economic policies, which branch actually deals with that?
You just said it, policies. So that's going to be Congress, and that's going to be the legislature. See, the court can't bring a case. The court has to wait until the case comes to them. We deal with disputes. We don't go find disputes. We let disputes come to us. If they can work
right.
that out, for instance, can Will Smith and Chris Rock work this out, work this situation? They can. The court can't say, I want to inject ourselves into this conflict between Will Smith and Chris Rock. We can't do that.
So no one
now,
can make anybody kill anybody.
Say what? I'm sorry.
I'm saying, so nobody in that situation can make one sue the other. That has to be a personal decision. And if it doesn't come to court,
on
it's not going to come to court.
Part of both of the parties.
Right.
Yeah. And even the victim in that case, or in any case, can decide not to press charges. Now, it gets
yeah.
a little sticky in domestic violence cases. Those rules are different. That was a misdemeanor, a very minor misdemeanor, an open hand slap. That wasn't the real problem. The real problem was the damage that it may have done to Chris Rock's reputation and how people see him, his age. You know, people, these
yeah.
guys look good, but that was a 57-year-old man that got slapped by a 53-year-old man, you see. So the police or the prosecutor won't have a case unless the victim called the police and pressed the charges. A lot of times in domestic violence relationships, domestic violence cases, the victim will call the police and then get in court and don't want to press the charges. But the defendant has been taken out of the court, out of the home, arrested, booked, and given a court date. In some instances, the prosecutor can move forward on the case without Chris
even
Rock
if,
pressing the charge.
So even if there had been an arrest, well, I guess there can only have been an arrest if there was a charge pressed, even though people said, okay,
a
we
complaint.
Saw an assault.
A complaint.
Yeah, there
mm-hmm.
has to be a complaint before it becomes a legal matter.
And, yes, right.
Yeah.
And a moving forward on the complaint. Chris Rock did not move forward on the complaint. Everybody saw it. And,
right.
you know, politically, you know, for the Chris Rock and Will, it's a little different than a run-of-the-mill domestic violence, you know, between your neighbors upstairs. You know, they tread a little differently with this level. And this type of case is different from domestic violence.
Because it was public, you know, and you know,
very,
at a
very
venue.
Public, but
well, you have the,
and it was some,
you know, the
you know,
picture
yeah,
academy,
and he's not complaining.
It, you know, yes,
mm-hmm. And it certainly wasn't a felony. I mean, we're talking about
yeah.
a city case, you know, at best.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I guess there are a
yeah.
lot of levels that you look at what law someone is actually violating. And what charges
mm-hmm.
could be attached to that could be brought
mm-hmm.
to court if
right.
someone chose to press charges. So now Viata says the recent votes in the Supreme Court cases regarding vaccine mandates seem to reveal a lot of bias or corruptions in the Supreme Court of the United States. What do you think about that? So, again, that's
nothing.
Is that
no
thing?
Comment, Viata. Hi, Viata. No comment from here. No comment by me.
Because
I haven't read those cases. I haven't read those cases, and she's already framed it as corruption and da-da-da, and I don't have any facts before me of corruption. Now, a person can have an opinion that there's corruption involved, but once again, a judge has to wait for those facts to be brought before them, and they get to choose those. I have not seen any of that. None of, you know, I haven't even read about corruption in the vaccine cases, so I don't even know what that's about. I have no idea, and that's a good judge. You know, I need the facts, the evidence in front of me. I need the testimony. I need one party to present the case. I need the other party to present their case. I need to hear cross-examination. I need to hear testimony. I need to hear reliable testimony. I need to hear credible testimony. There's so much I need to hear before I make a decision. I can't make a decision now. And it's like, once again, it's like an umpire standing outside of Wrigley Field saying, come on in and buy a ticket. And, oh, by the way, the Cubs are going to lose today. That's not what an umpire
no,
does.
You haven't
the
seen
umpire
the game.
Has to wait
right.
The case.
So, so
I mean,
how
many tickets do you think you sell? I mean, how fair
right.
do you think that court would be if the judge gets on a radio show and says, listen, I'm for this, I'm against that, I'm for it. Only
right.
the legislatures and the Congress can do that.
Right.
Let me give you a short thing. This is really important for the listeners. I promise, I hope this helps. And you know how I am. You know I like to make sure that people understand things. The way things start in this country is with an issue. Let's take an intersection where we need a red light. We need a red light in this intersection because now there has been information and data that says there are too many accidents at this intersection, and this intersection could use a red light or stop sign. That information is people who live in the area, the victims, mad dads, mad mothers, for stoplights and traffic signals, okay? When that happens, they take it to the next level of local politics. They either take it to the mayor or they take it to their alderman. They may even start with the precinct captain and the mayor and the audit. Then there might be a actual meeting at the alderman's office. And everybody in the neighborhood near that intersection gets together and they come up with the need for a policy. And when I was in law school, I didn't pay that much attention to policy issues. And now that's all that this is all about. The laws are about policy issues. There's a need. A need is based on what's good for the public at that intersection where we need that light. And from there, you take it to the alderman. The aldermen agree or no, or they don't agree. It's a discussion that takes place in the council meeting, and then there's a law made. That's how laws get made.
Anything that has ever happened in this country, a group of people
have got together and made a decision. Look at the Constitution. Look at how it was written. What was the policy behind having a constitution like that? What was the policy behind the 14th Amendment? What was the policy behind the 13th Amendment, the 14th, the 15th, the 19th Amendment? Okay?
There was something behind the 6th Amendment of the Constitution. Right. Well, I know we got just have a few minutes. I want to make sure people, Wendy, I want to make sure people can get your contact information and make sure if they want to get involved, make sure you're able to be a good
I can be found. Situation. Yes, I can be found at Wendy Williams for Judge. That's my like page. Go to my like page, Wendy, W-E-N-D-E, Wendy Williams for Judge.
You can also go to my Facebook page, Wendy Williams, W-E-N-D-E Williams. Please get out and vote. It's very important that you do get out and vote. I am from the people. I am the people. And I want to be the people's judge. I want justice for all, not just for some.
Okay,
Wendy Williams,
that
the number four, and then judge.
Yeah. Okay,
so
that's your Facebook.
That's the Facebook
right.
like page. And then just my Facebook page, Wendy Williams. So go to both of those. And then some other information will be coming up. We're building the website, WendyWilliamsForJudge.com. Elect WendyWilliamsForJudge.com. And more information will be coming up. And as many of you people know, my name is Wendy Williams. I have returned to Williams. It's my maiden name. But I had practiced law and married and practiced under Deloach. I am now Wendy Williams. I returned to my maiden name. And you'll see that on the ballot because I made the ballot. So I'm
well, all right. Well, congratulations
of,
on that.
Yes. Yep. That was a lot of work right there to get on that ballot, let me tell you.
Yes. Well, we certainly appreciate all the wisdom that you have shared. And we're looking forward to
hearing you. I hope it was helpful.
On Saturdays, we'll get a snippet more. And Viata says, we miss you, Wendy. So, yes.
I miss you too, Viata. And wait a minute. Let me send a shout out to Zelda. Zelda, thank you so much for your support. Thank all of you at the Female Solution for your support. And I will be sticking my head in the door on, you know, when you guys are on the air and just, you know, commenting and saying hi and letting your listeners know that I am running for judge right here in Cook County Circuit Court. Don't forget to vote June 28, 2022. You know, a lot of our ancestors died for that right to vote, and it does make a difference, and your vote does count, and it makes all the difference in the world. And it's time to get more representation on the bench that look like you, that have had your same experiences, who live among you and shop among you. You know, we're from the community at large, the community at large. So don't forget, get out and vote, and early voting, I think, is going to start June 1st. 2022.
All right, get ready. Well, thank you so much, Wendy Williams, attorney Wendy Williams. Looking forward to hearing just.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Xiexie. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, Gracias. Italy, Grazie. Egypt, Shukran. Ghana, Medasi. Nigeria, Eshe. South Africa, Ngiyabonga. Senegal, Geret. Kenya,
Asante, Israel, Toda, Pakistan, Shukriya, Afghanistan, Tashakur, Saudi Arabia, Shukran, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you, and may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.